Chapter 9. The Last Wall Attacks. The Orc Moon hung over the Holy Orb of Terror, a rock that threatened an imminent drop, shattering the bland grey surface of mankind's home. But it was no longer master of the void. Space Marine ships stood off outside the range of the moon's gravity weapons, arrayed in attack formation. 7 mighty battle barges, more than a dozen strike cruisers, scores of lesser attack ships. Behind them shelter the huge Adeptus Mechanicus Ark and factory ships, their metal bellies full of cybernetic armies, ready to wreak cold vengeance upon the orcs. There was one other ship of significance in the heavens. The mighty naval vessel Autocephalax Eternal stood at high anchor, treacherously doing nothing.
"Signal the Autocephalax Eternal again," said Corland.
He stood upon the highest dais of the Abhorrence, staring at the coward Lansung's flagship through the centre of the grand oculus.
"She is still not responding, my lord Corland,"
reported one of Beaumont's bondsmen. Corland watched the other vessel as his own fleet flew past it.
"Anchored there, doing nothing," said Beaumont. "The High Admiral will answer to me himself."
"Ignore it," said Issachar over the fleet vox. "There is more at play here than warfare, some political move on the part of the High Admiral."
"Begin the attack," said Corland.
In precise formation, the combined fleets of the Last Wall attacked the orcs, while Lansung's battleship looked on. Coming in 3 echelons, they speared deep into the moon's attendant flotilla, obliterating everything they came across. Orc cruisers and captured Imperial vessels burst into short-lived blossoms of fire as wide spreads of torpedoes and projectiles smashed into them. Space Marine interdiction fighters sped out from their battle barges, driving off Orc fighters that came out to meet the fleets. Adeptus Mechanicus war arcs came behind, shielded by master rays of arcane energy projectors. On board waited the Tagmata of Mars. Cybernetic fighter drones, piloted by disembodied human brains, swarmed in close support, shooting down orc rockets and vessels that came too close. The moon was vast, a planetoid hooked from its home and outfitted in an undeniably orcish manner. Craters had been bored out, turning them into caverns with deep black interiors studded with lights, the outer infrastructure of buried hangars poking out from them into the brilliant shine of Sol. Roughly built towers, docks, and other carbuncular constructions scarred the surface. Its giant face leered at Terror, so the Space Marine saw it side on, beetling brows as large as continental shelves turned skyward, a false mountain range of a nose, a complicated mess of scaffolds and buildings 100 kilometers long that made up the jutting lower lip. Things of greater scale existed in the galaxy, but none of them had been built by the orcs. Corland stood at the command podium on the bridge of the Abhorrence. With the plan in motion, he deferred command to the individual chapter masters.
"Drive towards them," ordered Beaumont. "Smash them aside! Burn them all!"
Corland watched with a more sober eye, adjusting his plans and counterplans as the battle unfolded. Part of him wished he were aboard Issachar's vessel, but Beaumont had showed him great hospitality, and Corland feared the headstrong Black Templars might stray too far forward in their desire to join with the enemy first, if not supervised.
"Stay back," said Corland. "We are at the extremity of the Orc gravity weapon's effective range."
Beaumont made a noise in his throat, but did not disagree openly.
"Maintain distance. Stick to the plan. Destroy the fleet. Make them come to us," said Corland.
The leading Space Marine ships came within lance range. Broad beams of energy striped the sky, impacting with the Orc flotilla with devastating effect. Many ships detonated the moment they were hit. In response, a large part of the Orc fleet surged forward.
"An Orc cannot resist provocation," said Castellan Clermont, Beaumont's second. "All batteries prepare to open fire. Bona Fide and Ebon, maintain protective formation."
The moon awoke to the attack, coming alive with a frenzied sparkling as a million guns opened fire.
"This is no threat," said Beaumont savagely. "We alone might have bested the moon at Asperia had Depras not withdrawn himself.
Now the orcs face the combined might of four chapters. They shall not prevail. Attack! Attack! Abhor the alien!
The leading munitions of the Orc Moon hurtled into the Space Marines' echelons, void shields flaring with impact flux as they struck the staggered lines of ships. More powerful weapons slashed out from tottering citadels, wavering energy beams that cut into the smaller vessels. An escort dropped out of the Fist's Exemplar line, venting atmosphere from its cracked hull in white clouds.
Stay on course! Bring the retribution of the Emperor to the fleet! Kill them all!
Spittle flew from Beaumont's ruined mouth as he spoke. Corland could barely credit they were of the same gene line, so overpowering was the Black Templar's fervor.
My lord,
spoke the Black Templar's tech marine Kant. His lips were stapled together, some show of contrition, Corland had been told, although for what the Black Templars would not reveal. His voice was a miserable metallic drone, soullessly issuing from twin vox speakers either side of his neck.
The Orc Moon exhibits a spiking of power.
All hands prepare for gravity attack, shouted Clermont.
An erratic flashing blinked in the moon's hollow craters. From pylons set about the face, squirming ribbons of energy rose, binding themselves into a thick cord. A sufficient build-up of power achieved, it snapped out like a whip, shearing through the Orc's own vessels before flicking along the Excoriator's arrowhead coming up below the Black Templar's line of attack. One attack cruiser took a direct hit, void shields giving out simultaneously. It imploded, the prow and stern folding up around a middle compressed to vanishingly small size. For a moment, it sailed on, bent double, carried forward by momentum, before exploding, buffeting the ships coming behind it with a wash of its breached reactor.
This is a new weapon, Vox Thane. I've not seen its like before. Some kind of gravity lash, said Cassandra. Such power, hissed Beaumont. They are gathering to fire again, warned Kant, the faintest hint of emotion creeping into his machine voice.
Once more, the flickerings essayed from the towers on the surface. Once more, they gathered and shot out. Again, the lash targeted the Excoriator's fleet, grazing the foresection of the Remembered Sin, Issachar's flagship, as it dissipated into a kaleidoscopic spray of particles. A portion of the Remembered Sin's hammerhead prow collapsed into glittering clouds of smashed metal and air. The Remembered Sin was twisted into a spin, as if swatted by a god.
Issachar, demanded Corland. Status! We live, replied the Excoriator.
Alarms whooped in the background.
But we will not survive another hit like that. We must get in closer, attack the moon directly. If we can strip away its weaponry, we shall stand a chance. Push through the fleet. I concur, shouted Beaumont. All ships onward. Arm cyclonic torpedoes. Target the moon.
It irked Corland that he did not confer with him first, but he held his silence.
Fire control. Liaise with the others, said Corland. Find a mutually acceptable firing solution. Multiple hits will give us the best results.
Yes, Lord Chaptermaster, replied Beaumont's bondsmen.
The Abhorrence's engines opened up, pushing it with indomitable power towards the moon. The sky around Terra was thick with debris. Shattered orbital fortresses and defense platforms floated in shoals of wreckage, making sailing hazardous for both sides. Orc fighters, keen to engage with the approaching ships, impacted with them in flashes of boiling fire. The Space Marine pilots, more cautious, better skilled, were taxed to the limit, streaking through the metal-choked vacuum. The bigger ships could not avoid the debris, and all across the last wall, void shields flashed and curled with impact flux.
Gravity lash arming, droned Kant.
Firing solution agreed. All fleets report readiness.
The bondsmen manning the gunnery station looked to Corland. A number of impact points flashed up on the hololith of the Orc Moon. Corland nodded.
All ships, open fire, he ordered.
Cyclonic torpedoes, each larger than a space fighter, slipped free of the launch tubes of 20 battle barges and strike cruisers. Their engines flared, and they powered towards the moon with building speed, passing the emissions of the gravity lash coming the other way. Now they were closer. The lash struck with redoubled violence. The tip of it took the battle barge of one of the Black Templar subsidiary crusades in the center. The lash writhed and coiled about it like a python, collapsing the ship's midsection so comprehensively that the remains of the prow and stern drifted free of each other. The stern detonated with a sunburst of reactor death, engulfing its escort vessels in nuclear fire. The lash had not done. It twitched through the Crusade's ships, smashing two more of them into nothing before finally dissipating. When it shut off, a single vessel remained, heavily damaged. It was targeted by a flight of Orc destroyers. Fire sped between the crippled Imperial ship and its predators, but there could be only one outcome. The ship disappeared, replaced by a perfect circle of brilliant light that winked out as quickly as it bloomed. Beaumont roared at the Oculus, slamming his fist into his palm.
"They will pay all the more dearly for that," he yelled. "Prepare to fire a second volley of torpedoes."
The first launch had reached the moon, slamming all over the surface. Explosions lit up its face with domes of fire and light. The moon shook under the impact. Tall plumes of ejecta reared up, gnarled fingers reaching for the Space Marine ships.
"Ready to fire again," reported Gunnery Command.
"Hold," ordered Corland, as Beaumont raised his hand. "Wait for the others."
"Corland," said Beaumont.
"Wait," commanded the Imperial Fist. "We are most effective working in concert. You will wait."
Shorter-ranged grav weapons began their assault on the fleet. Clouds of energy bubbles projected at the ships, crushed all those they touched. Long-ranged reverse tractor beams tore pieces from hulls or pushed vessels off course. For all the havoc wreaked on the moon's surface, there were hundreds of thousands of weapons still of all types, unleashing their full power on the approaching vessels. Void shields throbbed, and across the fleets they failed with oily pyrotechnic displays. Battle barges shook under the barrage. Several of the smaller vessels were destroyed. By now, the fleets were close to the moon, deep in the debris field. Here were thousands of captured Imperial vessels, many undergoing crude refits. The broadsides of the capital ships boomed constantly, blasting Orc craft and pirated Imperial ships to pieces. Destroyers dueled with fast Orc attack craft, and everywhere, tracers of anti-interdiction fire streaked the sky. Icons flashed across Corran's station. Vox confirmation came in from the rest of the fleet.
Now open fire, High Marshal, said Corland.
Do as he commands! Open fire! Roared Beaumont.
But his men had already responded. More torpedoes raced towards the moon, pounding into the surface. The weight of fire issuing from the moon lessened.
Brother Kant, is the gravity lash disabled?
Negative, said Kant.
They are charging to fire again.
My lords, we have reports of multiple boarders across the fleets, reported the Voxmaster. Teleport attack.
They will have taken these craft the same way. They will not find us so easy to overpower, said Beaumont. Seal the bulkheads. Weapons free. Activate corridor defences.
It is done, my lord.
Corlin pressed his knuckles into his command station.
Bring the fleet around. Get us between Terra and the face. The pylons have to be brought down.
Too late,
shouted Kant. The gravity lash arced directly towards the Abhorrence. The bondsman at the helm shouted,
Evasive action!
And the ship plunged as quickly as it was able. The ribbon of gravitic energy raced over the command tower as it slipped down, shearing into the engine stacks of the battle barge as they presented themselves. The ship lurched madly as the gravity wave perturbed its course, throwing men everywhere, an effect that worsened enormously when the beam cut into the stern. Corland slammed against his command post and fell over it, the effects of the Orc weapon making a mockery of the Abhorrence's grav plating. He fell down a deck that was suddenly vertical, skidding along the metal towards the back of the ship. Somehow he got his feet under him and activated his maglocks. He lurched upright painfully, standing perpendicularly to the upended gravity. Men flew past him, dragged towards the artificial gravity well of the lash. The ship rolled violently to port. Through the Oculus, Corland saw the bona fide burning engines hard to clear the stricken vessel's path. With a further mighty wrench to port side, the beam shut off. Gravity returned suddenly to the correct vector. Bond's men slid down the back wall. Unsecured articles fell from the ceiling. Alarms blared. Toxins sang. The lights had gone out, replaced by the murky red of emergency lumens. Men groaned in pain. A dozen of them did not get up, but lay still. Throughout it all, Kant had remained stoically anchored in place by his master auger array.
"We have lost our port engine assembly, my liege. There is heavy damage across all decks in the aft section. Several of our tower superstructures are no more. Multiple casualties among our bondsmen and servitors."
Beaumont picked himself up from the floor. Bondsmen Medicaid teams hurried in to help their stricken comrades.
"Get us back on heading. Continue attack run.
Gravity weapon charging again."
"My lords,"
called a bondsman at the Auspex Center.
"My lords, we have the energy signature of a large fleet approaching from Terra's night side."
"It cannot be the Imperial Navy. The Autocephalax Eternal stands off, and there are no other naval vessels in the system," said Beaumont.
"There was no warning of orcs on the far side of the throne world," said Courland.
"Gravity weapon is close to full charge," warned Kant.
"Brace!"
shouted Claremont. The lightning discharge built, and Corlin prepared for the worst. The attack never came. The face side of the Orc moon appeared to change shape, redrawn by a swift painter working in blinding light. The oculus dimmed itself at the sudden fire, and the space marines saw the moon's face deformed by a dozen atomic blasts. From out of the maelstrom, a fresh fleet came sailing, jet-black silhouettes set against the destruction they had unleashed. Adeptus Astartes vessels. A powerful, sonorous voice burst over the vox.
"This is Chapter Master Malfons. The Iron Knights respond to the call of the last wall. We apologize for our tardiness, but we are here. The Sons of Dawn stand together, awaiting orders."
"The gravity lash is disabled," said Kant. "Auspex indicates 80% of all orc surface weaponry non-functional."
"Malfons," shouted Beaumont. "Well met, brother."
"Continue attack run," ordered Courland. "All fleets converge. Establish blockade pattern. Iron Knights support the Fist's exemplar."
"Understood and confirmed, Chapter Master Courland."
"And Courland?"
"Yes, brother."
"You have our regret at your loss. Moving in to support the Fist's exemplar now."
All around the moon, the night of the void turned to mottled day as the space marines broke off their charge to the moon and dealt death to the remaining orc fleet. Caught within expertly intersected fields of fire, the orc vessels and captured Imperial mercantile ships were torn to pieces.
"Now the real work begins. What will you do, brother?" said Beaumont with an appraising look. "Join the fray or remain here? You are the last of the Imperial Fist. Perhaps you should not risk yourself. Who will lead the attack?"
"You? If you so command, then I will gladly lead," said Beaumont.
Courland examined Beaumont's scarred face, but could not read the fragment of expression displayed there.
"All fleets of the last wall prepare to board the moon," Courland ordered. "Adeptus Mechanicus arcs, the way is clear for you to move in and begin your deployment."
Courland turned to Beaumont.
"I will lead an attack party myself."
Beaumont gave him a wild look.
"In that case, brother, I have a gift for you."
The orc bombardment had ceased, and now the halls of the Abhorrence resounded with the activity of men. As Bond's men and the servants of the Black Templar's forge ran towards the vessel's damaged sections, squads of space marines jogged towards their drop halls and the embarkation deck. In Beaumont's personal arming chambers, silence held sway. The cowled bondsmen still went about their business as if nothing had occurred, checking Beaumont's collection of weapons for upset and damage, and setting right that which had been disturbed. Beaumont led Courland through his Spartan day room, through a small weapons workshop, an ammunition store, and thence into his innermost sanctum, an octagonal room lined floor to ceiling with weaponry. Most of it was of fine imperial make, adorned with emblems of the shield and the Templar cross, honor chains and shackles coiled carefully onto pegs beneath each mount. Intermingled were a number of weapons of alien make of all types, from the obvious to the obscure of purpose.
"You are surprised," said Beaumont when he caught Courland examining the Xenos devices. "These are my trophies, many taken from worthy opponents, unclean though they were. But there would be no honor in employing the weapons of the alien against the alien. What I have for you is of far nobler origin."
He pointed to an alcove where waited a large object covered with a white silk shroud, black Templar crosses repeated hundreds of times over it in an interlocking pattern. Beaumont nodded at one of his arming bondsmen. The man came forward and tugged the shroud free. Underneath was a suit of Terminator armor painted in the bold yellow of the Imperial Fists.
"This suit is one of the very first of the Indomitus armors manufactured," said Beaumont, indicating the familiar plain helm and heavy gauge chest plating. "Its name is Fidus Bellator, and it was fashioned in the closing years of the Great Heresy War."
He looked at Courland.
"I doubted you, Courland. I cannot deny it. I have yet to be convinced you are suitable to lead the assembled might of the Last Wall. Yet you have proved yourself in other ways. You are confident, sure of purpose, tactically astute. You are worthy of the rank of Chapter Master, and so I may yet change my mind. In recognition and in friendship, I give this to you." "I do not know what to say, High Marshal," said Courland wonderingly.
Much of his chapter's supplies and materiel had been destroyed around Adamantua, though there would, of course, be armor and weapons still aboard their great star fortress of the Phalanx and in their barracks on Terra. But were there any Terminator suits left? He doubted it. They were all lost, along with the First Company.
"Then say nothing," said Beaumont. "The armor is not dishonored, for Fidus Bellator has borne these colors before. Once it resided in the armoriums of the Phalanx. If it makes it easier to accept, let us agree that I do nothing more than return it home. You do me a great honor. I cannot repay you."
"I do," agreed Beaumont. "And you can repay me. Repay me with glory, Chapter Master. Avenge your brothers."